Hi guys, and welcome back to the Building Financial Fitness Podcast. And today we have Chris Ng in the house. Happy 2024. Tell us about what's been going on in your life.
Thank you very much. Nothing much has been going on in my life. I've been trying to run my business. It's getting harder and harder. Like many Singaporeans, I'm hit by the higher GST, higher inflation.
Actually, today I wanted to talk to you about a blog post that you put out.
Okay.
Which I thought was very interesting. And I would really love to see like how people respond towards it.
Okay.
But this is actually around the topic of how would you design your life if you're young again?
All right. Okay, before I begin, let me put some context into the question.
Mm-hmm.
It started because a group of uncles like myself, folks in the late 40s, decided to come together for coffee.
Mm.
And some of the guys who are ahead of me with children who have just completed their university, they're commenting about their lives.
Yes.
And they said that Gen Z is it's very lazy. They don't seem to be very dynamic. And the funny thing is that he envied the son and he wanted to be like him. And he said that if he redesigned his life, he would do what a lot of Gen Z people want to do. They will lie flat.
Mm.
They will do the bare minimum to make a living and they will just enjoy their lives. And I think what's very key for what my friend said is that he wanted more travel in his life, right?
Looking back. Now that he's lived out maybe 50 years of his life. So.
Right. Yeah, but the thing is that when Gen X people talk about Gen Z people, they don't really live in a Gen Z world. We live in a Gen X world and we're applying our values to this Gen Z, right? So it's actually, we're not trying to say that Gen Z should live like us. It's just that we imagine ourselves to be in our 20s, you know, with that younger body, what would we do, So I said, you know, I have the opposite kind of conclusion as my friend. I said, I would do the opposite. And because there's so many opportunities, thanks to hustle culture that some of the younger millennials and older Gen Z have started, right?
So what age category are we looking at for the younger millennials and older Gen Z?
Okay, so we're looking at gurus like Gary Vaynerchuk, a little bit of Andrew Tate. I know fans are probably not into Andrew Tate.
Mm.
But there's this idea that you could hustle your way to get somewhere in life, right?
Yeah.
When I follow this medium, I tend to be more attracted to that message.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I come from a different generation, but generally, I really like the idea of overemployment, where if I'm a capable software engineer, I could figure out how to work for a second company.
So, and moonlighting has been like a very big HR trend, right?
Right. I would break every single HR contract that I've signed. And if you catch me, you fire me, I have another job to back me up. So if I do that, I might be able to get maybe $200,000 to $300,000 a year. And that's what I'm going to do for maybe the first 3 to 5 years of my working life, right? I would just sell my software engineering skills. It's fine to burn yourself out because it's 3 to 5 years.
So very much the income maximization when your life levels and energy levels are still high.
Yeah, but of course you need to combine that with an extreme frugality, which I'm very familiar with, right? Because that's what I do, right? And the beauty is you're probably able to complete the financial independence journey, right? If you apply yourself well within maybe 3 to 5 years. So that will make me around, I think, 28 to 29 years old, right? And then I began to talk about the regrets I have in life because there are two programs which there is no way I could sign up for. Even if I have all this money in the world, even if I've succeeded, right, with my family. The first program is this thing called the JET program. It's a program that allows someone, I think, in the 20s to fly over to Japan to teach English.
Right, yeah.
But they don't put you in a city. They put you into some kind of
rural
village,
area.
Rural area where they find that it doesn't really improve the English of Japanese kids. But for the instructors, their Japanese becomes really good at the end of that several years. So I thought that is something which I deeply regretted because there is an expiry time, right? Another possibility is, I understand New Zealand has some kind of a tourist visa where you could travel to New Zealand. You cannot find a professional job in New Zealand, but you could work in a farm and you could pick apples, for example, right? So I thought that's something that it's something that this person can aim for in their late 20s.
And these two programs, are there age restrictions?
I believe that there are age restrictions. So you can't do them if you are in your mid-30s and above. So that's out of reach for many Singaporeans who complete their financial independence journey.
Mm.
Yeah, so that's roughly how I would do it. But you got to realize this is extremely theoretical, because if you want to live like a Gen Z, you have to live within that environment, right? Which means that you have to deal with higher school fees. You've got to deal with a lot of different constraints, like a tougher education system, a better but tougher education system, right? And so you got to basically package everything together. I don't mean these ideas to be something that an actual Gen Z would even want to do, but it's generally what happens when uncles get together, and it encapsulates a lot of our personal regrets. So for my friend, I think he probably worked very hard. He's very successful. He's got multiple pieces of property, but he's hustled really hard, right, when he was younger, but basically on one job.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Because really, there's the benefit of hindsight. When we are talking about Gen Zs, there's not much history that they can look back on.
Right.
But I think that there's been this element of they have sort of edged a lot closer towards that self-actualization piece Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
That's right.
Sometimes they come quicker to the conclusion of, I'm not looking to maximize my income. I would like to focus on other areas of my life in a more holistic way, right? So they're not looking to like sell their soul, like, you know, they're kind of like moving away from hustle culture. And maybe some of them, they are more interested in the concept of like mini retirements where you work really hard and then you like take a year off and do your thing, and after that you go on your next journey of your career. So they're not front loading all that income maximization. Yeah.
Yeah. I would even reason that in my friend's case, his son is backloading the kind of work. Because if you really want to set up a family, you will find that the financial strains come later in life. And you've got that problem with the knowledge that you picked up in school not being useful anymore in the workplace. The large language models are evolving very rapidly. There is a new kind of LLM. Apparently, it's called RAG. I don't know what that stands for. But apparently, Microsofties are figuring out how to embed logic and some verification into an LLM, right? So that's coming up very soon. It's something we need to look out for. What's going to happen to white-collar jobs? But I don't think lying flat's the answer. I think that the answer would leverage on the boundless energy of youth, right? And it doesn't make sense if you see someone in the 20s lying at home every day. You know, if they're playing a computer, I would expect them to be hustling and monetizing it, right? I don't expect them to be like playing it for leisure, right? Yeah. So that's what I think. But I am fairly old, and you know, my son might, you know, okay boomer me, even though I'm not a boomer. Yeah.
You know, that's that phrase, right, where they say youth is wasted on the young.
Yes.
And I wanted to talk about
every
that.
Generation talks about it.
Every generation
right?
talks
youth
about it.
Youth is wasted on the young. Yeah.
And I don't think that youth appreciate how much energy and vigor they have until it hits in maybe mid-30s, where you realize that, you know, you can't actually go out and chiong at the same level that you used to anymore.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think I have the same problem as well. But my regrets are sort of different from other people, because I did spend my youth studying a lot of certification exams and trying to get ahead in the rat race. A lot of this, and I don't think the government would like me saying this, a lot of upskilling is actually wasted, because you may or may not use the knowledge that you've gained in your line of work. In my generation, I've always defended myself, and I've defended myself very aggressively when I take a language course and people challenge me, why do you take the CFA and study French and Japanese at the same time? I said, you imagine this as a real option. An option only comes into the picture when it's above the strike price. You know, and a lot of these qualifications that we earn, they're not above the strike price, but they might go above the strike price in the future, right? And those were the days when I was an IT professional. I've not become an investment trainer yet. I didn't expect it to take so long for it to exceed the strike price, you know, but it only occurred in my mid-40s, for example. So that view of education is that a lot of options expire worthless. And so that's what I want to leave people to think about. When you upskill, you need to think about how deliberate you are, right? And young people have a lot of choices. Maybe if I don't upskill, I could, for example, I could manage my personal brand. I could launch a YouTube channel. There are a lot of alternatives, right? And of course, it's much cheaper to upskill. I can take a course in Coursera. I can write my blog in the afternoon to monetize my eyeballs. You know, I can even drive Grab in the evenings. So they've got this plethora of choices, right? But the tragedy is that they have too many choices.
I think that there is benefit to, you know, when someone is young and has less financial obligations, for example,
that's right,
to actually try as many things as possible.
Right.
Whether or not these things are immediately monetizable, I feel maybe can be secondary because I mean, it's arguable. You're arguing against that, but I think that maybe not chasing so much the money aspect of it, but being able to put yourself in situations where that allow you to better understand who you are and what motivates you, what doesn't, what you like, what you don't. It's more self-discovery.
Okay, I like your point about self-discovery. It's just something that is very alien to my generation in that it is considered expensive and wasteful. Right? And self-discovery should be done in tandem with making money. I mean, why do you need to sit down in the corner, you know, channel Diogenes, you know, this Greek philosopher, life flat, to discover a little bit about yourself when I could be out from 9 to 5, you know, I could be waiting for my tape backup to happen in the data center while I discover yourself. Now, do note that I don't think tape backups work the same way anymore. These days, they would just replicate the data into the cloud, right? But I'm sure you can walk and chew gum at the same time. You know, I think that is what I think. And young people don't have a lot of time. They have to quickly find a way to settle down and get a house because the increase in value of a home is part of your retirement planning, right? When you monetize a home through a reverse mortgage when you hit your 60s and 70s, it would provide a lot of retirement security for a lot of people. And you miss the train in your 20s and 30s. It actually gets harder and harder because real estate prices keep going up. At least that's what I'm seeing so far.
Yeah.
Right.
But there's also that trend, which is like another big topic by itself, where I'm sure you've seen where people are moving towards just rental. But it doesn't help them build up their assets.
Right. I would be very careful about thinking that coming up with the idea of renting in Singapore because I think we've just survived a pretty nasty squeeze where people who rent suddenly find that the rents have gone up by quite a bit.
Yeah.
Right. So, but we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know how things will look in the future. I don't think it'll be that friendly to landlords for the next 2 to 3 years, but that's only 2 to 3 years, right? We're talking about decades down the road for my kids. And if only I could impart my knowledge to my child and they wouldn't listen to me. It's that at the moment you might want to look at whoever hustles, whoever overemploys, you know, and then when you come back, get travel after your system, go to Japan for 2 years, go to New Zealand for another 2 years, you know, hopefully find a wife, you know, find a spouse, right? And then quickly settle down, right? And live the Singapore dream. But I think that's very outdated. I wouldn't dare to impose it on young people these days. They probably disagree with me.
Yeah, because I hear you on what you said on income maximization, and, you know, even if you have like other pursuits, you always, you know, think about monetization in mind. But how much of it do you actually see amongst the Gen Zs today?
Now, here's the thing. I have to admit that I really don't know. I might know more about Gen Alpha than Gen Z because I have 2 kids who are Gen Alpha, right? And I know it's very difficult to get through to them. So my son loves nonsense money. So we're buying a lot of Roblox cash for him.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. But I think we would just have to see how Gen Z will take care of themselves. As far as I know, the older millennials who have become thought leaders are pitching this hustle culture pretty aggressively. And I think that if a Gen Z guy, I'm just speaking from a guy's perspective because I'm a guy, if they follow that kind of perspective and they apply themselves, they will probably be less miserable than other guys who are forced to go into Instagram and you look at all these beautiful pictures of, you know, bare-bodied guys emerging from their Ferraris, you know, and that kind of hustle culture. And I think that's actually quite damaging, yeah. One of the things I really like about my old experiences when I'm growing up is that I don't have Instagram flashing me all these superficial images of success at me at all times. So I'm not as depressed as young people today. Yeah. And a lot of what I have to do with my own kids is to just protect them and tell them that it's a very narrow definition of success and it's also very rare. That's why people don't talk about the drug addiction, the self-loathing and the depression that comes at the back end of all these Instagram images, right? And I think that's what I think parents like us need to do when we raise Generation Alpha. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway, because I think that definitely when you look at the younger generations, right, they are really born into an age where social media consumption is extremely rampant, right?
Right.
That's the baseline for them. And at least, you know, for you and I, even some of Gen Z, like at least they actually knew a world where there wasn't this excessive consumption of social media.
Right.
There wasn't maybe this, you know, flashing of like supposed wealth.
Right.
You know, they can see that, you know, there is actually that disconnect between the real world and what people want to present themselves as on social media.
Right.
But for the younger generations, I'm not sure if, you know, that distinction is immediately clear. So I think that that's actually a very good takeaway for everyone, right? Not just people who have kids.
Yeah. Mm. But I think the education system is aware of this. And I don't come out with this without reading some books on what sociologists have written about when it comes to the generations. But social media is definitely going to be one major trend that makes them different from us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the situation will get worse for Alpha because it's almost like Gen X, we deal with Facebook. Gen Y on the millennials, they do a lot of Instagramming.
Mm.
And now with Gen Z, you're seeing a lot of TikTok, which is a different kind of algorithm. You can't even choose what shows up on your screen.
Mm.
And we don't know what goes into these algorithms and what kind of impression are they creating for their children. What's the ideal kind of life that they want? I guess it's just something that we would just have to experience as they become adults. Yeah, and it would also have to blend in with this new world of work, right? That's no longer tied to a particular geographic location. Offices are less important. You might be able to work for and form multiple contracts with different companies simultaneously.
Yeah.
Yeah, that will create a new kind of employee that is neither a contractor nor an employee. You know, Singapore, we have the Employment Act. Does it apply? You know, questions like this need to be answered, right? So people with multiple gigs, people, they might actually have more financial freedom than people with one job. One monolithic career identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're seeing that rapidly break down.
Yes.
And we won't know what's going to happen for the next maybe 1 to 5 years.
Mm.
And I'm also observing this space very closely. Yeah, to prepare for this, I actually read a book on the world of work in 2013. And the problem was that there are no new ideas. Even the experts are not, they don't have an idea of what are the hot skills that you can pick up, you know, that parents can prepare their kids for. Yeah, so it's we're boiling it down to luck. You know?
I mean, I have an idea on that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think and this is sort of born out of maybe discussions with people in HR. One, I think critical aspects is actually the soft skills, the emotional intelligence of people, on top of the technical skill sets, right? I think especially when we see a lot of work being automated, for example, you know, what you said of the how LLMs are evolving, maybe the human aspects or like, you know, what makes us, you know, different, that part needs to be honed.
I'm very doubtful about what these HR practitioners say. The reason is because they've been saying this for the past 20 years.
Mm.
If you look at books by, I think, the gurus maybe 20 years ago, I could list some names like Daniel Pink, right? there is this idea that the creative economy will eventually win out. But they've been playing that same game for the past 2 decades. And when ChatGPT and Midjourney came out, the idea is programmers will end up destroying their own jobs because they can actually do some coding, right, with these LLM systems. But what you're really seeing is that the programmers are as cool as a cucumber with all this disruption going on. They are the ones getting retrenched right now, but they don't seem concerned because I think the demand for these software engineers is relatively high, maybe in a different domain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but the people who are screaming, who are calling the regulators to come in and save them, I find that they're artists and creative professionals.
Mm.
And I do experiment with creating some role-playing products on my own. In the past, one difficulty was I couldn't work with an artist because he's actually quite unpredictable and I had to share my profits with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now I could create art with just a simple prompt on ChatGPT 3.5.
Yeah.
And yeah, I really think that the prediction about the creative economy, right, might not be spot on. Now, even the book I recently read, they said that management and leadership skills will continue to be a premium. That isn't anything that is particularly counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not your idea.
And when
anyway.
We talk about creativity, it is always the assumption that you already have technical skills, right? You have all these no-code kind of programming platforms, but then, you know, you have this ability to bridge between business and IT. That is not new. There's been something going on for 20 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't really have new ideas, you know. Yeah. The only idea I have, you know, which I think has some credibility is Tyler Cowen. He wrote on Bloomberg and he said that generally what LLMs will do is that they will really disrupt people who work with words and ideas, right? Which means that lawyers are not safe. And his prediction is that ideas people would lose currency. Yeah, that is actually something new. Because I think he's saying something which a lot of people who are professors in some liberal arts courses, they refuse to admit. Yeah, they're still learning the philosophy of dead white men for the
so
past 2,000 years.
So people with ideas would lose currency.
Yeah, would lose currency. Mm. Yeah, but it doesn't mean that you don't need creativity. It's just that if you solely deal with ideas, you'll be replaced by a new kind of perhaps technocrat who has a lot of cognitive bandwidth to challenge you in the creative space, you know? Yeah, but like I said, I don't know much better. Yeah, but I'm also trying to synthesize all this information that I'm getting about the new world of work. We'll see how it goes. We will find out very soon, maybe in 6 months when a new algorithm kicks in.
I think we know that ideas are cheap, right? Even when we ask ChatGPT to generate ideas, it can generate a whole bunch of ideas. But then obviously the critical thing is execution, right?
Yeah.
So
execution.
So, ideas, I think it's very clear that anybody can come with it. But what actually is feasible? I mean, I guess we're talking about from a work perspective. What's actually feasible within the constraints of like budget, within the constraints of like manpower, through all the sort of things? I think that's a critical thing, right?
Networking to get the right allies, getting all the resources you need to carry out your plan. Mm. That's kind of hard to train. Yeah.
Yeah, which is precisely, I think, you know, part of the soft skills that I talked about.
Yeah. So can you get that with SkillsFuture? I'm really not sure. My generation, we've never been formally trained in all these things. We learned on the job. And how is it going to be different for young people, right? Now, young people are fresh, but you need to remember that their teachers and their lecturers are people in my generation. It's always this problem I have is that you talk about there are new methods that you are deploying, there are new pedagogical approaches, you know, multidisciplinary work. But just remember that the professors are people like me.
I think definitely there's benefit to having like to actually carving out a life that's more multifaceted, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of like going back to, you know, the example of the coffee you had with your friends and if they feel that, you know, they focus so much on one thing and miss out on other parts of life, which is travel.
Yeah.
And I think the same approach can be made for, you know, for anyone now, right? Where you're not just progressing just in one area of your life,
right?
There's no linear progression. Right. So I think that that's a good takeaway. Just being curious about the world, not just like from a fluffy perspective, but then like you said, like being able to think about what are skills that can be monetized and really going deep into that.
Yeah. But young people should also fight back, right? If you think that I've been very preachy to you and I'm close to my 50s, fight back, you know, share your perspective. We have a conversation, we have a debate. And I think that's probably the best approach. I love arguing with young people.
So, if people wanted to reach out, if they wanted to have that conversation or argument with you, where can they find you?
Okay, Google ERM intro, ERMINTRO. Okay, it's the Dr. Wealth Early Retirement Masterclass. I teach people how to get out of the rat race. And my material is obviously dynamic. They have to respond to the latest changes in the world of work. So we can have a conversation then for my preview. I can look for me and pick a fight me on my blog.
That's an open invitation.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not official.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks so much, Chris, for being
Thank
on.
You.
Thank you. Many thanks as well to all of you out there for tuning in. This has been a fantastic conversation, and we would definitely love to hear what you think about it. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can reach out to us through the email podcasts@melisten.sg or at my Instagram at misfitfi. Aside from that, if you enjoy what you're listening to and want to hear more, please help to spread and grow the show by subscribing on MeListen or Apple Podcasts, or by following on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Finally, the Building Financial Fitness podcast is an original production from MediaCorp and recorded at Scape Live Studios, The Pod, powered by Audio Technica and City Music. Episode production is done by Junas Yu, with editing and support by Danny Cordy and Gareth Fernandez. Once again, I'm your host and BFF, Junas Yu. Until the next time.